Okay, we have Niara on the other side of Skype. Hi, Niara.
Hello.
Okay, thank you for the interview, Niara. This is Chuck Fei from NJ13. Welcome to the show. And you were a radar operator in U.S. military air force 25 years ago. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. In 1980.
Okay. What exactly did you see on the radar screen? Anything unusual or anything unexplained?
Well, not usually. But years after I got out of the Air Force, I discovered missing time. And it was quite a chunk of missing time. It was about three and a half, maybe four months. And I had to look into that.
How do you find out?
Well, I had a friend who we got to be good friends and talked about all kinds of things, about spirituality and UFOs and all kinds of things. And he noticed that if I talked about my time in the military, I kind of avoided the subject. And he thought that was odd because it was so open talking about everything else. So he sat me down one afternoon and he said, "I want you to tell me about your military time from start to finish." And I said, "Okay, no problem." So I said, I went into Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, in San Antonio, Texas. I went to boot camp for 6 weeks. I went to technical training school at Keesler Air Force Base in Mississippi. And then my first duty station was Nellis Air Force Base, and I worked on a Tonopah electronic warfare range. And then I stopped talking and I just stared at him because I couldn't remember anything about working at Tonopah. I could only tell you that I worked there. I couldn't remember anything about the work area, about travel to and from work. I couldn't remember the people I worked with. I couldn't even remember the name of the motel that I stayed at in Tonopah every other week. And this, when with the realization of this, came a wave of nausea.
Right.
You know, I didn't actually get sick, but I did feel nauseated. And with the things that I've been into my whole life, with spirituality and alternative healing, I know that a wave of nausea is kind of what's considered a body flag of something wrong. And so I really wanted to find out more about what happened.
When did you join the military?
I joined in April of 1979, and again went through boot camp and technical training school. Then I went home for the holidays, Christmas holiday, and then right after the Christmas holiday, I traveled out to Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada, and that's when I had my first, you know, actual duty station as a radar operator.
And when did you talk to your friend?
This was years later. This was,
I
believe, 1992.
1992. So you left the military already?
Okay, I left the military in 1983. I was only in for 4 years, which is a regular term of enlistment.
All right. Okay, so after 4 years, you surfaced in military, and then one day, 1992, you talk to your friend, and you realize you got 3 months to 4 months, which is missing, but you don't know anything about it.
No, I just didn't think about the military time. For some reason, I just was focused on my life and being a mother to my children, and I was married at the time when I got out. And, you know, I just, my life was taken up with other things, and I just didn't think back about Tonopah until my friend asked me about it, and it was very troubling to find that I couldn't remember anything about Tonopah. I had to work very hard to get back even little bits of memory, and the way that I did it, and I'm writing about this in my book, about what memory really is comprised of. So basically what I did was I remembered technical training school, and I remembered friends that I knew in technical training school who I also knew were at Tonopah, and I tried to use the memories of the friendship to kind of pave a trail into that missing time area. And I did manage to retrieve little bits of things, but nothing important, mostly off-duty recreational activities.
Okay.
And then I did the same thing, you know, afterwards. I thought about people I knew at my next duty station that were at Tonopah and tried to track that back into that time. But it was very difficult to try to get to anything.
Okay, right. Well, I just want to know more information so the audience can tell, I can know you better. Before you leave the military, your actual work is staring at the radar most of the time. Did you see anything unusual?
I only saw the unusual things when I had the hypnosis session.
Oh, right.
And I should probably mention that the kind of radar that I worked on, there's the big air traffic control radar that sweeps the whole sky. And the kind of radar I worked on was a specialized military radar. It was a surface-to-air missile or anti-aircraft artillery radar. So the big radar that sweeps the sky would call out to our little radar sites and tell us where the aircraft were in the sky. And then we would point our radar in that part of the sky and try to pick up a lock on that aircraft.
Right.
And what we were doing on the Nevada desert was training pilots to fly against radar to increase their survivability.
So your actual work on the station was to train the pilots, not actually getting into the war or something.
Right. It's a training exercise, and they actually made a movie about it from the pilot's point of view, and the name of the movie is called Red Flag. All and right. It stars William Devane.
All right. Okay. Okay. 4 months, which is missing. That is a long time. Incredible. I mean, unbelievable. What did you do next?
Well, we had a Whole Life Expo come to Las Vegas, Nevada, which was where I was living at the time. And one of the speakers there happened to be Bud Hopkins. And I went to his presentation, and he was talking about abductees.
Right.
And at the end of his lecture, he asked for questions, and I raised my hand, and I said, well, I have this strange nightmare from when I was a child, and then I have this other strange experience, and then I have 3 months, you know, three or more months of missing time from my time in the military. And about that time, he said, talk to me afterwards. Right. And so I did. And he agreed to do a hypnosis session with me that early that evening. And that's when the memories began to reemerge.
Right. I haven't really tried the hypnosis before. But what did you see during the process? Did you see anything, like any creatures, any grays or anything?
No, I didn't see any grays, at least not right away. Basically, he asked me, he said, well, he said it's January 1980. Go to some place that's significant for you in January of 1980. And immediately I said, well, I'm standing on the deck of the radar van and it's nighttime. And I'm not almost ever out here. I'm never out here at nighttime, but it's nighttime now. And we're standing on the deck of the radar van. I'm looking in the sky. And I'm seeing UFOs, or what I should say, alien spacecraft up there. And these were not far away, you know, little lights that are nice to look at in a lot of UFO pictures. One of the UFOs was so close that I could see it in very clear detail. And I can describe it. It was glowing orange on the bottom, and the bottom of it looked like what I would term a metal skin.
Metal skin.
Yeah, a metal skin. And underneath the skin, you could see that orange glow. Like the metal was translucent.
Right.
And there seemed to be lights lighting up in sequence around the bottom that made it look like it might have been spinning on the bottom, but it wasn't really spinning. It was just lights lighting up in sequence. And there was a center around section of it in the center of the bottom, and it really wasn't very far away from me. It was maybe 100-200 yards,
right,
and up in the sky, and it was low. And I was very afraid of what I was seeing because I only had a secret security clearance. Right. I did not have a top secret clearance, and right. I was really scared. I thought, man, whatever this is, it is classified so high that I can't believe that I'm seeing this at my security clearance level, and I was really scared. In addition, we were forbidden very sternly not to speak to each other beyond what was necessary to run the radar test. And what we were doing was we had just come out of the van testing the radar to see if it would track these craft. And of course, it was ridiculous.
Right.
The radar could not track those craft.
Mm.
And they could basically appear in one part of the sky, and then suddenly they'd be gone and they'd reappear someplace else.
Mm.
There was no way that this radar, with its clunky servos, could whip around that fast to follow them. There was no way to track them.
I see. So did you see any creatures? I mean, during this hypnotized process?
Not in the military time in this particular session. In my later sessions with Gloria Hawker, and it took, from 1994 to 2003 for me to heal enough and find someone I trusted enough to even have hypnosis again. But I did see creatures, or I should say ET, associated with the military in the session with Gloria Hawker in 2003.
Mm.
And the only other thing that I can say about seeing extraterrestrials was when Bud finished, or actually he started with, it's hard because the tape is so messy I can't really listen to it. But he did take me back to the nightmare I had when I was 4 years old.
Right.
And I woke up screaming from that nightmare, and he took me back to that nightmare, and we looked at it, and it was a contact experience.
Right.
And I was picked up as a small child, and a lot of things were done, and I have been an experiencer of extraterrestrial phenomenon since childhood.
Right.
And I believe, and Melinda Leslie is a brilliant researcher.
Mm.
She's done so much work on this subject, and she really has drawn many, many, many correlations between people who are ET experiencers in their lives and then the interest that the military or covert ops people have in them because they are experiencers.
So, information from your memories, you remember you see ETs. Any species did you remember? Do you remember what kind of species of alien you saw?
Yeah. As a child, I saw grays. I call them Zetas, Zeta Reticulans. So I just call them Zetas.
Right.
And then in the session about the military experiences with Gloria Hawker in 2003, I did see a gray who was sitting with eight people. I feel like I'm kind of coming in the middle of the story here a little bit, but I did see a gray at that time who was sitting with several human beings and during my experiences. And then I also did see a reptilian.
Oh, okay. You saw the reptilian as well. In the same case or different cases?
Yeah, it was different. I didn't really see the reptilians with the grays. I saw a reptilian in a room in an underground facility.
Right.
And all I was doing really was passing the room on my way to someplace else. But I remember looking in the room and seeing this reptilian. And it was a very frightening thing to look at. And then there was also a reptilian on the craft that took me to the moon.
Took you to the moon?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about that? I mean, are you seeing there is alien base on the moon?
Well, I think there are human bases and alien bases on the moon. I think there are both. This was, again, this was from the hypnosis session with Gloria Hawker.
Right.
And she asked me if I had ever been off the planet. And that's when I got this very heavy feeling in my body. And the images started to come of, I was taken to a hangar where there was a craft.
Right.
And I was given these clothes to wear, and they were kind of silver clothes. It was some kind of spacesuit, but it wasn't like the big clunky spacesuits that they give astronauts.
Right.
This was a lot more sleek, let's say. And it and when I put it on, it kind of formed itself to my body. And when I put the boots on, the boots kind of suctioned themselves on and made an airtight seal. And there were gloves that did the same thing.
Right.
And so I put this on. I didn't have a helmet on, but I put this suit on. And I was told to get onto the spacecraft, the flying saucer. And there was a ladder underneath it, going up into it. And I climbed up there, and I was told to lay on the floor, kind of like cargo.
Right.
And I was there with a couple other people that were laying on the floor as well. And they were men, not women.
Mm.
I was the only woman there.
You were the only woman
and
there.
I was the only woman in that case.
Right.
And then some people got on and took the chairs. You know, there were some chairs in the craft. And I assumed they must be important people because they got a chair. So
right.
I saw the reptilian. There was like a beam in the very center of the saucer.
Right.
And the reptilian was behind the beam, and he stepped out of it, out from behind it for a minute, and I saw him. And it was really, again, very frightening to look at this creature.
Right.
And then he moved back behind the beam, and I didn't see him anymore. And then the craft took off, and we traveled to the moon. And it didn't take nearly as long to get to the moon as you would think it would, you know, not like the Apollo missions.
You have any idea how long it takes?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I would just hazard a guess that maybe it was 30 minutes.
Wow, that's
20 or 30 minutes.
Okay, the whole process. I know the whole process. You recorded from hypnotize, including what you just mentioned, that you were ordered to get on the craft and lay on the floor and with people, with the chairs and the reptilians and all that. Did you see this in a clear mind, or you were being drugged?
No, I wasn't drugged. It was the light inside the craft was low, so it wasn't real bright in there. And I was, you know, again, I was scared. A lot of the time, at the time I was scared, I was also angry at the same time. So it's kind of like, okay, scared and angry a lot, almost all the time.
So, yeah.
And,
So
it's hard to say. I mean, you're in a situation like that and you think, gosh, the wonder of it all. You know, you're seeing
exactly,
these things that nobody else sees and so on and so forth. But the actuality of the experience,
right,
when you're under that kind of fear,
right,
when you're afraid, you tend to kind of pull into yourself.
Yeah, this is awful. I can imagine that. Okay, what I want to ask you is, do you believe in UFOs and aliens? At that time, when the time you're being abducted. I mean, the reason I'm asking is because for a lot of people who don't believe, they will think this kind of thing is crazy. But if they saw it themselves, they saw the real alien, they saw the real craft right in front of them, and they think they were even more crazy, and they would block the memories from that. So what I want to know is, do you believe in that already when you saw them?
Well, a little bit.
A little bit.
It's interesting to say. At that time that I had the experiences in the military, I was a little bit into UFOs. And partly that was my dad's fault, because when I was 16, he gave me Eric Von Daniken's Chariots of the Gods to read, all three of his Chariots of the Gods books.
Right.
And he said, you've got to read these.
That could be my dad's fault as well.
Yes, yeah, so I did read those, and it did pique my interest in the subject, and wow. I have always been fascinated with science fiction, and always fascinated with travel to other worlds. I collected, when I was a kid, I collected all kinds of material on Mars.
Right. Right.
And so, yeah, I was very interested. And I drew pictures also. This is interesting. I drew pictures when I was a kid about spacecraft.
Right.
And I drew a picture of a huge spherical craft that was like a small country inside that craft. I mean, it housed, you know, maybe thousands or millions of individuals.
Right.
And then around the edge, around the circumference, there were openings where scout craft would come in and go out. Mm. And I drew this when I was a teenager.
All right, let's get back to the case. So people who sit on the chair, you think they're human?
Yes.
I mean, and inside the craft, the people who sit in the craft. Do you think they're important people?
Yes.
Well, obviously, they won't tell you that we are on the way to the moon, welcome aboard. So, when you arrived, what did you see?
Well, we got off at a base. So, there was, you know, activity there and buildings and people. It was very much like a base in the desert.
Right.
And to be honest, I don't recall too much of it because it was a real heavy experience being there. It was not a fun experience at all. A lot of bad things happened to me there. Mm. And so it's really difficult to even think about it. I'm not sure, you know, what to tell you other than they tried to find work for me to do. That was similar to my electronics work. So I operated some machinery, and I wasn't allowed to sleep very much, and I was not also allowed to have very good food. I got water and a little bread and something that I can only call gruel, you know, some kind of nasty soup. So I was worked pretty much for the full week, and then not allowed to sleep at night, and there was more sexual assault that happened
That's awful.
During the night. Yeah.
Oh, that's awful. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that's important about the moon experience is that people say, well, why didn't somebody miss her when she was back on the planet? Well, my work at Tonopah was to travel up to the Tonopah Electronic Warfare Range in Tonopah, the city of Tonopah, to stay at a week at a time. So we would be up at Tonopah for a week, and then we would be on the bus and go back to Las Vegas and work in Las Vegas at Nellis Air Force Base for a week.
Right.
So it was a week up on the range and a week down on the range.
Right.
So the week that I was at the moon, the people on the range were told I got sick and was sent back to Las Vegas.
Right.
And then the people in Las Vegas thought, oh, she's just doing her regular shift up at the range.
Right.
So nobody missed me for the whole week.
But didn't anyone of your friends or your family trying to find you? You've been disappeared for the whole week.
No, my family thought that I was up working at the range for the week. On my usual range rotation.
Right. And they have no idea you went to the moon and go through such a terrible experience.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry to hear about your story. I mean, it's awful. But anyway, so one day suddenly they said you're not going back to the Earth. Is that right?
I was only there for a week. I wasn't there for a long time.
Oh, you're only there for a week?
Only a week. Because that's how our schedule was. It was a week up at the electronic warfare range where I worked on the radar. Mm-hmm. And then it was a week back in Nellis Air Force Base. So a week up and a week back and a week up and a week back.
All right. You're not staying at the moon once. But
I think only once.
Only once. Okay, mm-hmm. I see. So after you
it could have been more times. I would have to have more hypnosis to examine that time further.
Yeah, of course. You don't want to go through that again because that's a terrible experience.
Yeah, right? I'm not anxious to do it.
Yeah, I can understand. Well, so that is my lab, is that right?
Yeah, it's my lab. The thing that about my labs is a lot of the people that have my lab experiences are not in the military.
Mm.
I was in the military, so
yeah. So
it's a similar experience, but I was military personnel myself.
Right.
And I think the important thing to look at with this moon experience is all the correlating information. I mean, Jose Escamilla has put out a film called Moon Rising, where he shows all these different things that have been airbrushed out of the moon. There is a Sergeant Wolf who was in the Disclosure Project witness testimony video,
right,
who saw photographs of buildings on the moon. So it's not only me coming out with this incredible, unbelievable story. There are intersecting pieces of information from a lot of other sectors.
Okay, one more question before the break time. Can you tell me, when you land on the moon and the environment of the base, what does that look like? Is that a high-tech base or like a normal military base?
It seemed like kind of a combination of some very high technological aspects and then the same old kinds of ugly buildings that they put on bases on Earth. So it seemed like a combination of the two.
Right. Okay.
And it seems to me that I remember a dome over part of the facility so that people could walk around without breathing equipment.
Right. I see. Thanks, Niara. Thanks for sharing. Okay, we'll go for a break right now and we come back with more information with Niara Isley and MJ13.